Welcome to another edition of The Talking Stick. I'm your host, Sandy Johnson. The Talking Stick focuses on issues relating to the greater Earth-centered community. Traditionally, a talking stick has been used in circles, giving each person an opportunity to speak their mind without interruption. Some circles use stones or crystals instead of a stick, while in other circles, the talking stick can be anything from a piece of driftwood to a branch that has been beautifully carved and decorated. The talking stick puts the focus of the group's attention on this one person and what they have to say. Much like the talking stick, a microphone can be used in a similar manner. Through our talking stick, we aim to bring you insightful, educational, and entertaining programming of a spiritual nature. My guest is M. Maka Nightmare, a Northern California witch and author. We spoke in October of 2001, just before Samhain, or Halloween, about the new book, Witchcraft and the Web, which is now available. Well, hello there, Maka. Thank you for being able to take some time out of your schedule and do a little interview about your new book that you have coming out. And I want to introduce you to those who may not know who you are. And so if you'd like to give a brief background and some information pertaining to maybe how long you've been practicing as a witch and your history and reclaiming, and give people a little introduction there, I think that would be great.
Well, I'm happy to be here, and it's sort of hard to tell where to start, but but I'll try. Like a lot of people, I've always been interested in things that are less conventional. I was brought up in a fairly standard Christian household, although it was considered a mixed marriage because one parent was Protestant and the other was Catholic. In those days, that was a mixed marriage. And anyway, it never fit, and I never really felt comfortable. And I really tried. So I was always interested, but I wasn't really exposed to much besides mythology and folklore and, you know, the kind of stories you hear when you're a kid. My mom did read me a lot of stories. The Oz books in particular I loved, and I loved all the Greek mythology. But they were stories. And anyway, I sort of was distracted a good bit of my life from finding the right spiritual path, and eventually I did, but I started to look into witchcraft around, I don't know, 70 or so, and I found a class in 1971 with some people in San Francisco, which I went to for a while, and then when the class concluded, I was offered the opportunity to get into it more deeply with some people, but I didn't know the people, nor did my husband have a whole lot of interest, and I was pretty much of a newlywed then, so I didn't pursue it, except in the most casual way of, like, you know, I went to things like witches' balls. And, you know, they were kind of quasi-private things, but they were groups. They weren't practicing, you know, they weren't like covens.
Right.
They were groups of covens. And then I went to a, excuse me, a friend and I went to a, I guess it was kind of like a lecture or a class at one of the local metaphysical stores in San Francisco in downtown about feminist spirituality or something. It had something like that in the title. I was definitely a feminist at this point. And this young woman was talking about stuff, and there turned out to be only three people in the class. Two of them were myself and my friend. But the teacher was a person called herself Starhawk. That was in 1975, and from then on, you know, she, you know, knew of my interest and invited me to Sabbaths once in a while with her covens. And so, but I didn't do a regular practice even then because I didn't really have a place to do it and I didn't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, classes started coming up, and they would invite, one coven in particular would invite other women. Sometimes it was the all women's coven, that particular coven. She was in two at the time, or three. And only one of them, I think two of them were all women. Anyway, I went sometimes, and met some people there who were in the same situation as I, very interested but didn't really have a place to learn. So she and her friend Diane started cooking up some classes, and the first class wanted another class. I was not in the first class. I was in the second, but it was built on the first class, and they said, oh, well, you can join because you've been working with us anyway. And so I joined the second class, and we really hit it off, all of us. There was maybe a dozen people in the class, and we said, oh, we really have to have another one. Meanwhile, there was an initial class, the Elements of Magic, going on at the same time as our Pinnacle of Iron was going on. And so they cooked up yet a third class, the Rites of Passage, which we went into, and some of the people from the first class went into. And after that was over, most of us who were in it sort of coalesced into a coven, which was called Holy Terrors. And we really thought we were. And it was great fun. It was, I wouldn't call it strictly Dianic, but it was had a definitely a Dianic flavor. And it was all women, although we weren't, you know, anti-men or anything.
Right.
It happened to be important with the stuff we were doing at that time in our lives, too. We had a certain simpatico with one another as women that was really, really wonderful, and we were really hot. We met every Tuesday for several years, and we would go on, and I think we would meet around 7, and we would almost never get home sometimes. So some of the people...
Was this kind of the forming of Reclaiming then, in a way?
Yeah, well... Reclaiming was sort of rolling by then. We were also, some of us had begun teaching some of these classes because there were more classes than there were people. I mean, it was more demand for training than there were people to teach them. So
right.
We kind of just jumped in feet first. You know, we barely had our own feet wet, and we just jumped in. And for the most part, I think it worked out well. Most of us did, you know, pretty much right by it, but. Anyway, yeah, and then at the same time as Reclaiming was forming, I think that was around 1980, we were putting on public Sabbaths. Well, public is sort of stretching it. They were kind of advertised in a little newsletter, but it was just like a newsletter that had a listing of classes and public rituals. It didn't have any articles or anything like that to speak of, a few letters sometimes, which I put out for a while. And the public rituals were great, and there was also some activism going on, which some of us were involved in and some not as much. This was also during, you know, pretty strong anti-nuke time.
Right, yeah.
Pre-Livermore and then during Livermore. So a lot of stuff got created, and a lot of the techniques that we use and the particular kinds of liturgy and stuff was being created right around that time. It was a very productive, fruitful time for probably most of us. And for me personally, it was a very significant change in my life, and a positive one, because I really felt great about it. And then, you know, gradually we became, most of us, sort of expanded and looked around and found other witches in the area and befriended them, and, you know, of different stripes, not necessarily the same kind of training we had.
Right.
I just sort of took off from there. I joined COG in 81, our coven did, and been doing that ever since.
I was saying, that's kind of her story ever since, right?
Yeah. And I'm pretty much doing similar stuff, except that I like to think we all have matured, both individually and as a movement.
Right. I mean, well, I definitely think as a movement, for sure. Why don't we get into talking about mainly the reason why we're doing this interview is because you have a new book. People may be already familiar with part of your writings that were featured with Starhawk in the Pagan Book of Living and Dying, along with some of the other members of the Reclaiming Collective. And it was really an eye-opening, inspirational book. And I highly recommend it to anybody who, especially pagan clergy, I mean, they should not be without this book, because I have a lot of people who have come to me and said, you know, in times of death and in grief and in times of preparation for one's own time of crossing, where do you go? You know, where do you go for inspiration? What kind of literature is out there, and so we're just really fortunate that that book is out and available, and thank you for the work that you did on that. But we have a new book to talk about, and that's The Witchcraft and the Web, which is coming out Samhain, is that correct?
Well, it's close to Samhain.
Close to Samhain, okay.
November is officially the date, but okay. How early November remains to be seen. How I got to do this book, this is really kind of remarkable, and it's very telling about the book itself. I, after the Pagan Book of Living and Dying came out, I started to do some traveling and do some workshops around the country whenever I could work together some kind of package and find a couch to sleep on in, in some city here or there. And I did a fair amount of workshops, and it was really fun. And so in the process of that, also Starhawk was writing a book that's now called The 12 Wild Swans. And she had given me some of the book to read and had consulted me about some of it. And I noticed in the back she had about 6 resources of websites. And so one of them was one I had just barely started. A friend of mine was bugging me because she never knew my schedule, so she put it up. And it was just, that's all it was, basically. It was one picture and a few words. And so when Starhawk and Hillary were doing the 12 Wild Swans and I saw that they had put me as a resource, I thought, oh, time to get a domain name. So I got a domain name.
Time to get virtual, right?
Yeah, and I thought, well, it's going to be in print if I ever want to change it, because it wasn't, you know, it was just something that I bought from my carrier, from my ISP. So I started a website, my friend Elsa DeLoen has been my webmistress since then, and the two of us kind of gradually built it up. And there's a press in Canada, ECW Press, and they had never published any occult or pagan titles, but felt that that was an area that they'd like to get into, and so the developmental editor contacted me based on my web presence.
Wow.
She had found me on the website, or found my website somehow, which is pretty exciting, you know?
Oh, yeah,
so
definitely.
It definitely came right directly from having a web presence. Although I am not particularly web savvy, I don't think. I'm probably more web savvy than some, but I'm certainly not a techie.
Well, I would consider anybody who can get and receive email and can turn their computer on within at least the top 10%.
Well, I can do that, and I can surf the web a bit, you know, and I can do a little bit of searching and stuff like that. But I'm not, you know, I don't know a lot of the technology at all. But I was a witch in sort of old-fashioned way. You know, I learned from other witches. I discovered when I got into this that there were lots and lots of pagans and witches who'd never been face-to-face with another pagan or witch, but they had communities that they had built online,
mm-hmm.
and they had been doing magic online. So the approach for this book, what the publisher wanted and the only thing that I felt I could write about was different from, there are a couple of web books out, or web, you know, books having to do with the internet and magic and witchcraft.
Right.
Some are really resources, you know, of websites they refer you to, and the others are about cyber magic or cyber ritual, how
mm-hmm.
to do magic online. My book isn't either one of them, although it has a little bit of both. It's really a cultural look at the effects of the World Wide Web on witchcraft, and it's considerable, so. There's been a lot of effects.
So with such a diverse topic, I mean, because it does seem to cover quite a bit, how did you prepare for this? How did you go about gathering your information and putting it all together?
Well, I did two things. I surfed the web a lot. I looked at a lot of pagan and witch sites and compared them, and I found that, you know, most of them are very similar to one another, have
mm-hmm.
pretty much the same reading list. They have little biographies that, with the same 10 or 20 books. Most of them, not all of them. And I set up a little listserv of my own, a little e-list called Cyberweaving, and I invited people that I knew and some that I didn't know from various venues, other lists and stuff. One of the lists that I had been participating on for a couple of years was the Nature Religion Scholars List, which is part of it's not officially, but it's unofficially part of the AAR, the American Academy of Religion. And on that list and a couple others, I said, hey, I'm working on a book about witchcraft and the web, and if anybody has an interest in that or has some knowledge about that and wants to take it, you know, out of this forum, I'm sending it the list, you want to sub. And so that's where I found some of the people, some of them, like you, I knew already, some well and some not so well. Some were very good friends. A couple of them are not particularly web savvy, but have written other books on craft. So there ended up to be, I don't know, 18 or 20, maybe a dozen of us relatively active. And so I asked them questions when I would encounter stuff or ideas or notions about where I saw intersections or influences of the web on craft. I asked them their experience with it, and I got wonderful, wonderful information, and a lot of it I never would have known. I didn't know anything about broadcasting and the wonderful...
the medium the that we're currently using, right?
Exactly, the medium we're using now. I didn't know anything about it until I talked to you and Mark Kelly. I didn't know much about online pagan online music. I did know about some of the external things. By external, I guess maybe that's not the right word, but the non-web-based things that were going on in the pagan and craft world,
mm-hmm.
such as international interfaith stuff and pagan institutions of higher learning, for want of a better term, which I call in the book pagan seminaries and ovaria.
Actually, too clever.
One of my new words in the book, yeah, is ovaria. I have a couple of other new words.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little too limited to call it a seminary, although I also have since then been invited to teach at a pagan seminary, which is called a seminary. And I said, sure, it doesn't have to be called ovaria for me to do it. So, yeah, I knew a lot of what was going on in the world in terms of our growth and our visibility and our networking and our working in various organizations and stuff.
This kind of allowed you to give it more of a microscopic look where you see where the different connections between the craft world and then the connected internet world meet.
Right. And there, everything that had been going on has accelerated and expanded and grown, and I think it, for the most part, gotten better and stronger because of electronic media.
So would you say that there's probably more examples on how cyberspace has made a positive impact on the craft than there are negative, but have you found some maybe of the darker sides of this connection?
I would say it's probably, I think it's more positive than negative, but I'm also an inveterate networker. I really love to communicate, and I love to talk to other witches about how they do stuff and what they do and what their experiences are, and I always did that before anyway. But I can do it much more rapidly and much more thoroughly now that I'm an email addict. I'm really pretty bad. I really love it. I just took to it very easily, even without knowing the technology.
Yeah.
The negative, I would say it's not all that different from what
the
I
real
call
world.
Terra space.
Yeah.
Like I talk about cyberspace and Terra space.
Terra space, I like that,
But, there are bookstores and resources and publishers that service a market for, kind of more lightweight stuff, less significant, less discerning, less deep stuff. And there are publishers and bookstores that also provide goods and resources for people who want to delve more deeply or are more discerning. And I think that's the same on the web. You can really get into stuff so deeply, or you can just
kind of flit along the surface
and just sort of sample stuff and dance around it without necessarily getting your feet all muddy.
So obviously this is been a learning experience just from the experience of you getting online to writing a book about other pagan experiences online. So would you say that this experience writing this book has changed you any?
Well, I suppose, I mean, everything changes you. I certainly think I'm more sophisticated about a lot of things. I certainly am more, I'm more discerning about online stuff, particularly about online personalities, because I'm really easy to bamboozle. I generally will take people at face value. And that's much, I mean, I can tell other things when I'm in the presence of people that might strike me as a little, you know, a little off court or a little off key somehow. But I'm not as sensitive to that online, and I do feel that certain people can put on, all of us probably can put our best behavior and our worst behavior online, you know, and we don't necessarily know the whole person in the same way,
right?
Usually.
I know that was one of the big discussions on the Cyber Weaving List was how can you be able to take a person for what they really are when all you have between you and them is, you know, this technology with words. You don't have the ability to look into their eyes. You don't have the ability to kind of watch their body language or, you know, get that physical presence about
right.
them, which gives you a little more insight into their dimension. You know, where with mm-hmm. doing email back and forth, it's really easy to come off sounding like a real, expert on something or be something that you're not. And I think a lot of people, that's a big draw for the internet, is to be able to put on that mask, you know, and be something that they're not. And it's a difficult thing to discern for people who do like to think the best in people and take people at their face value. So that was a really interesting conversation.
I do find that difficult myself, although a lot of people feel that, you know, it comes across in the pixels or something, you know.
They feel the vibes through the screen.
Really, they do. And I did quote some people in the book who have that experience, and I just haven't so far been that sensitized, I guess, myself. Although there is another side to it, and that is we do use magical techniques in our practice of aspecting and shape-shifting and mask-wearing, and I did explore a bit how they intersect or not, or have parallels or not, with online personae. And I think that at the same time as we can be deceiving and put on a mask that isn't really truly us, we also can develop a... it may be false and it may be genuine, but there's a sense of intimacy. I guess because you're not, like, looking at people, and if you're a shy person, for instance, you're not, like, looking at people because you don't see them there, you can be really free with yourself,
right.
who you are, and expressing yourself. So I think it's two-sided, you know. It can foster this intimacy where you have let go of your inhibitions and can be more genuinely yourself, and it also can foster artifice or construction, mm-hmm. a constructed persona.
It can manifest in either extreme.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it helps either way, going either direction.
So if we didn't have the internet, how would you see the neo-pagan movement today? Because it has progressed so much, and a lot of that has been through the ability to network so easily
mm-hmm.
because of the internet, and we've seen just a huge increase in awareness, education, outreach, and pagan community building just all over the place. And so I just wonder, if we didn't have the internet, how would you see the neo-pagan movement? Would it still be behind the kind of secretive, more underworld type of genre? Or do you feel that it's just, you know, it's hit its time to blossom either way, whether the internet was there or not?
Well, I certainly think that all of this would be slower without the web. I think we were, many of us, were headed in that direction of being more out in the sunshine. We had been a fragmented and isolated population and mistrustful of one another, and I think that has the web and the net has done a lot to erase those distinctions and to foster more trust and more sense of community. But I think it was happening anyway. I think it would have been much, much slower. And also, a lot of pagans didn't even know they were pagans until they sort of found on the web that there were other people like them.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I've run into a lot of people who, you know, would type in into search engines just different things of maybe an occult nature that had always garnered interest from them, and then connecting with other sites that held the same beliefs and same philosophies that they did. And it's like all of a sudden this whole gateway opens mm-hmm. up to this whole other world, and you're bombarded by all this information, and you want to be able to absorb it and assimilate it overnight, you know, but it's quite overwhelming, really, how much is out there.
It is. It's very exciting, and it's very overwhelming, and it's very fast.
And what a wonderful way to celebrate it than with a book, too, you know, and get it into the print form and the print media. Yeah, exactly. You know, go back to its roots, literally. Well, speaking of which, the witchcraft and the web, the book is going to be out early November, and it's put
sometime
out
sometime in November.
Sometime in November. So we're looking at November.
I would hope for early, but I'm not really holding my breath.
Where would people be able to get this book? Is it going to be readily available in local bookstores, or is there a special place that they're going to need to go to get it?
Hopefully it will be available in regular bookstores. The book, publisher is ECW Press, and they have distributors in the United States, a distributor in the United States that's planning to market it, and apparently they're very eager to get it. The salespeople, both the salespeople for the press and the distributors, they're very eager to get it, and people have ordered it in their local bookstores and are waiting for it. It's on Amazon waiting to go. You know, they're waiting to get their stock. So, and if you don't see it and you're interested and you live somewhere where it's not in your local store, ask for it. It's not going to be hard to get. It's, you know, going to have mainstream distribution.
Well, that's great to know, because I know a lot of people who have been waiting for this book to come out, so it'll be easy for us to find. And if people want to find out more about you and your background and to possibly be able to schedule you to come speak to a group, I know you still have quite a busy schedule of lectures and workshops ahead of you. Where can they go to find out more information about you?
I have a domain. It's machanightmare.com. That's M-A-C-H-A. NIGHTMARE.com.
Well, thank you very much for your time. Remember to check out Witchcraft in the Web, coming out in November at your local bookstore. And don't forget to visit Maka on her website at MakaNightmare.com. Thank you, Maka, for spending some time with us this evening and talking about your new book and your experiences. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Sandy. It's a pleasure.
My thanks again to Maka, and please check out her new book, Witchcraft and the Web, now available through your favorite bookseller. Don't forget to visit Maka at her website, MakaNightmare.com.
Thank you for listening to The Talking Stick. If you have suggestions for future programs or would like to comment on a show, email goddess@partytown.com. The Talking Stick is written and produced by Sandy Johnson. Engineering provided by Brad Johnson. The Talking Stick is a product of the Party Town Streaming Network at partytown.com/radio. This program is available for non-commercial use and can be downloaded from the A-Infos Project at Radio4All, that's radio4all.net.